Live from Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Randall White in for Beth Ruyak. San Francisco was the site of this weekend's big state Democratic convention, a more active than normal scene as the state has moved up its primary, bringing a lot of attention to the state nationally. 14 of the 23 candidates, 23 candidates running for president were in town to woo party faithful. We should mention there isn't a competitive Republican primary currently, so our focus right now is on the Democratic side. Joining us to talk about who came out on top this weekend is Cap Radio's Capital Bureau Chief Ben Adler and state government reporter Scott Rott. And Ben, set the scene for those of us who don't follow politics as closely as you do, and few people follow it as closely as you do. What's the purpose of this convention?
Well, each party gathers, each state party gathers, and this year each party's gathering twice, Republicans in February and September, Democrats this past weekend and in November. They are gathering this first round of conventions, they call it the organizing conventions. Both parties elected their state party chairs, and in the fall they'll be endorsing candidates for the primaries that are now in March. So you had a very big crowd, roughly 5,000 people when you combine delegates, about 3,500 of them, and other folks who were in attendance, and certainly a lot of media, a lot of national media as well. And it was a crowded scene at the Moscone Center in San Francisco.
And so you mentioned delegates. Scott or Ben, as far as delegates are concerned, who are they and what do they do? Help us understand.
So delegates are elected in each assembly district, and then there are some who are automatically delegates if you're an elected official, particularly Congress or assembly or something like that. And delegates have votes on party business, be they resolutions, either committee votes, and of course, for state party chair and later on in endorsements. So that's their job.
Are these delegates the same delegates as for like the Electoral College?
No, nor are they the same delegates for the national conventions. There's a different system. I mean, there are 3,500 CA Dem delegates. California, as a state, will have a little under 500 delegates to the Democratic National Convention, which is by far the most of any state, and also a huge reason, along with the early, when combined with the early primary, why we had 14 candidates in the presidential race this weekend.
So among those presidential candidates, was there a general tone or did they really differentiate themselves?
There, a lot of it blended together, especially the criticisms of President Trump and the calls for changes in immigration policy and climate change and healthcare. There was some variation. For example, some candidates got booed for saying single-payer healthcare or Medicare for all was not the right way to go, which of course shows that the crowd of 5,000 people, there is not not a microcosm of the California Democratic Party as a whole, or at least the people who are registered Democrats and vote Democratic in California, let alone California as a whole, let alone the nation as a whole. But, by and large, they had a lot of similar things to say. I mean, there were times you would hear candidates try to differentiate themselves, and a lot of times it was, and we can hear some examples, trying to point out that, the person who wasn't there, former Vice President Joe Biden, who has been saying, look, we have to get back to normal in America and get rid of President Trump and elect me. We had some of the candidates with strong implied, though not explicit, criticism to that.
And I imagine Elizabeth Warren among them, she really got some of the best responses there at the convention, U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren.
My understanding from talking with folks and just observing the hall is, yes, one of the strongest. And I think she helped herself significantly. We can talk about who did and who didn't have strong weekends. But yes, let's listen to Elizabeth Warren.
Some Democrats in Washington believe the only changes we can get are tweaks and nudges. If they dream at all, they dream small. Some say if we all just calm down, the Republicans will come to their senses. But our country is in a time of crisis. The time for small ideas is over.
Sounds like a large room there, Ben. She got a good turnout?
She did. She brought a lot of folks in from outside for this. So did Bernie Sanders, I think, as well. Kamala Harris had supporters there too.
Because there's a lot of stuff happening simultaneously, right?
And yep, a lot of events, different caucuses, and then there was this other event offsite, this Move On Big Ideas Forum. If you heard on Morning Edition this morning, Scott Detrow talking about how someone came on stage and grabbed the microphone from Kamala Harris. That was not at the state party convention. That was at this Move On event.
And your focus while you were there was specifically to look at the different presidential candidates that were there, among some of the other stuff that was happening, right?
Yeah, that was mine. Yeah. There were a lot of other storylines. Scott was following those storylines.
Yeah, and Scott, you were there to focus on the inner workings of the party?
Yeah, you could say that. I mean, one of the main focuses for me was keeping an eye on the chair election for the party.
And that was completed throughout the weekend, right?
Yes. The election took place on Saturday. There was some speculation that it would go into a runoff on Sunday morning. And it turned out that the individual who won, a labor leader from Los Angeles, Rusty Hicks, he secured a majority of the vote. So there wasn't a runoff. So we all got to sleep in a few hours later on Sunday.
Yeah. Okay. We'll get more into the winner and the thoughts around that coming up in just a moment. But Ben, I want to get back to the sound from the candidates that were there. So you also heard from Cory Booker, Senator Cory Booker, who also was warmly received.
Let's listen to him. He came on at the very end, and he was basically the only candidate to spend significant time talking about the mass shooting in Virginia Beach over the weekend. He's made that a big topic of his campaign, but it may have also been due to the fact that right before he came on stage, the outgoing state party chair chose that moment in the middle of all of these presidential candidates speaking to go on stage and mention the shooting, which by that point wasn't new news. It had been, you know, everyone had been aware of it for some time. But he basically made it appear that he was going to diverge from prepared remarks and talk about this. Then he pivoted to, again, you're going to hear what could be read as an implied criticism against Joe Biden.
I want to tell you what this election is really about. It is not about one guy in one office. It is about a referendum on who we are and who we must be to each other. Beating Donald Trump is a must. Beating Donald Trump is a must, but that is a floor, not a ceiling. We are bigger than that. We have greater ambitions than that. I want to tell you right now, Democrats, this election cannot be about what we're against. It must be about what we're for.
It sounds, you know, he's when you hear it out of context, it sounds like he's shouting as opposed to talking. But he had, I think, the most organic energy in the room, in that I think Elizabeth Warren had a lot of support from people in the room already. I don't know if Cory Booker had that kind of support. I think he gained it during his speech.
You mentioned a veiled reference to Joe Biden, who skipped the convention. Will that hurt former Vice President Biden?
So I spoke with, and it's in my story that ran about 20 minutes ago on Morning Edition, I spoke with a media strategist who is a former advisor to Democratic Governor Gray Davis, Carol Dahman, and she said, no, he's the former vice president. He's got 100% name ID. This is not his crowd, as evidenced by folks getting booed for decrying single-payer health care from the podium. So that gives you an idea. Folks I talked with and asked about the vice president, they have concerns with him, and they weren't happy that he didn't come. Now, the outgoing chair of the party did get up on the stage yesterday and say she talked with Biden on Wednesday, and he said he's sorry he couldn't make it. He had this conflict. He was in Ohio over the weekend at a Human Rights Campaign dinner, but that he said he would come to the next party convention in November. We'll see if he does. If so, the Democrats are attempting to put together a forum in collaboration with Univision. It would not be every candidate on stage at the same time. It would be, I guess, someone interviewing each of the candidates. So kind of exactly like what just happened, except with Q&A instead of speeches.
I see. And finally, we have some words from Mayor Pete Buttigieg, who you have characterized Warren, Booker, and Buttigieg as possibly being among the three winners, if you want to put it that way, of this convention?
Yeah, I think Mayor Pete, as folks like to call him, had a pretty strong showing, at least in terms of gauging the reactions in the room. He, too, had a message somewhat similar to that of Warren and Booker. Let's listen.
Take it from this Midwesterner. Though he is deservedly unpopular, this president really could win again. We're not going to let that happen, are we? We'd better not. But he wins if we look like defenders of the system. He wins if we look like more of the same. He wins if we look like Washington. And so the riskiest thing we could do is try too hard to play it safe.
Try too hard to play it safe. Is that another reference to Joe Biden?
It's in the eye of the beholder. What do you think, Randall?
Well, I don't know, which is why we have experts in the room like you. Senator Kamala Harris, her home state, her home city for that matter.
Yeah.
What was the reaction to her?
I was kind of surprised she didn't seem to have the room the way some of the other candidates did. And these are folks who know her quite well, who have heard her speak, who have voted for her for statewide office numerous times, and probably are fairly in sync with her policy-wise, at least with the votes she's taking in Washington, D.C. But in talking with some delegates later, and you'll hear some of that conversation later this week on Insight, we sat down with four undecided delegates and talk with them about the presidential race. And they're not really, I mean, two of them voted for Sanders 4 years ago in the primary. The other two voted for Hillary Clinton. They're not really quite there on Kamala Harris. In fact, a couple of them said they were underwhelmed or disappointed with how she did. And that, you know, my sense is it went beyond just those, you know, that small, not necessarily representative sample size of delegates. And it was not that great of a weekend for her in comparison to some of these other candidates.
And there was a lack of addressing California's needs, including by Senator Harris.
That's my read of it. And as I reported a short time ago on Morning Edition, I was struck by the fact that, you know, in Iowa, it seems like every candidate's going to be willing to talk about ethanol. In Nevada, seems like Yucca Mountain, this nuclear waste site that Nevadans want to go somewhere else and everyone else seems to want to go to Nevada, always seems to come up. There's no equivalent that came up in California. You could be taught, you know, nobody really made a nod to how expensive it is to live here, how so many folks in California are living in poverty. Nobody really made mention to our challenges with wildfires and how to pay for them. The big issues that are being argued over at the state capitol, and there's one reference to Stephon Clark, I should say, went in the bigger picture of the use of you know, police shootings, but no reference to the use of force debate for when police can use deadly force at the state capitol. So again, I was talking with Carol Dahman, the media strategist. She's like, that was a missed opportunity. If you're looking for a way to stand out from 14 candidates, that would have been a way to do it.
What do state and national Republicans take away from the messages they heard from the various candidates at this event?
I think everyone is kind of just processing it all. But that's what made me think that the folks who had the strongest days this weekend were the ones who I mentioned. Now, that's one weekend at a very early moment in the race. One obvious takeaway, which we heard NPR's Scott Detrow talk about on Morning Edition, is if you're getting ready for these Democratic debates at the end of this month, maybe a preview in how some of the other candidates are going to go after Joe Biden. We may have heard some of the opening lines and kind of testing out of arguments over the weekend.
We're hearing from Cap Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler. Also in the room, state government reporter Scott Rodd about this weekend's California Democratic Party convention in San Francisco. And Scott, as we mentioned a little earlier, you were a bit more focused on the inner workings of the state Democratic Party itself. What were the policy issues that seemed to be most important that came to the top that you saw?
Some of the main ones would be housing, healthcare, wildfires. But I would say healthcare and housing were two of the ones that really rise to the top. And if I were to pick another one, probably criminal justice reform. And that would encapsulate things like use of force, as well as California's prison population.
Was there much on climate change or what's happening at the border?
Yeah, I would definitely, I would say those were also certainly factors. I mean, it's a bit different for the election for the chair for the California State Party. A lot of what they're focused on is sort of figuring out where there are points where they can unify the party and have sort of one strategic voice moving forward. So who they were speaking to, it wasn't a big, broad audience. They were trying to capture the votes of these delegates. There are only about 3,000 of them. So their message was very much tailored to those delegates.
So the previous chair was accused of sexual harassment and had to step down. There have also been accusations of a larger problematic culture at the state party headquarters. Let's start with who won the election.
It was Rusty Hicks. He is out of Los Angeles. He is the president of the Los Angeles County Labor Federation.
And his challenger?
His primary opponent was Kimberly Ellis. She has an activist background. She has a bit more of a progressive platform. And she also has a history in the state Democratic Party. She was his main challenger. There were, I believe, five other candidates. None of the others broke 10% in terms of the number of the delegates they got. So it was really Ellis and Hicks that were facing off.
And you spoke with delegates who explained the reason why for their votes?
Yeah, it was very interesting. As the delegates were waiting to vote, there was just this huge, huge line that wrapped around the building and that went into different rooms and kind of wound back and forth like a TSA line at the airport. So for a reporter, it's great because it's just, you know, fish in the barrel. I could just go up and talk to whoever I wanted. And I think they were so bored that they were just happy to talk to someone. So I spoke to a man named Wayne Norton, who is a Rusty Hicks supporter. And here's what he had to say about why he was voting for Hicks.
Because I think the party needs a mechanic. The party needs someone who can do the nuts and bolts. And I think Rusty Hicks has a history of being able to run things.
So you can hear that reference to kind of his labor background and getting things done, not sitting back and sort of waiting for things to happen.
And again, Rusty Hicks is who won.
Yes, that is who won. He would be described as a more, I guess you could say, moderate. His platform would be a little more moderate. Again, this is all in the context of California politics. So moderate for a California Democrat. But I also spoke to a number of folks who were supporting Kimberly Ellis. Actually, the first four people I spoke to were Kimberly Ellis supporters. So I was thinking that we might see a runoff. But here's what one supporter had to say, Rob Means.
You know, obviously a woman of color is a big deal and would represent our party more than another old white guy. Speaking as an old white guy.
And so there you're hearing this eagerness for change within the party.
Was there much diversity there that you saw?
I would say there's a decent amount of diversity among delegates, yeah. But I think when looking at who is leading the party, they want to see that diversity reflected, not just in the delegates themselves, but in the people who are pulling the levers and making decisions.
Did Hicks, you had a chance to speak with Hicks. Did he give a sense of how he would rebuild the office culture that people have described as problematic?
You know, he did speak to it. He didn't speak very directly. You know, I did ask, obviously, the former chairman, Eric Baumann, he resigned amid these allegations of sexual harassment. The state party is now facing several lawsuits. And he said that it's absolutely something that they need to address head on. It can't be something that they just make decisions on behind closed doors and hope that it fades away. He said the first and foremost, is addressing these lawsuits. It's very hard to get party business done when you have these lawsuits sort of hanging out there. So that's something that he wants to make sure is addressed head on, but also remaining cognizant of the fact that the Me Too conversation isn't going anywhere. It's still very much alive. So he did speak to it a bit.
You have been doing a lot of reporting on sexual harassment in state government. Is this somewhat of a reflection of some of what you've uncovered in your investigation?
I don't know if I would draw a direct connection in terms of what's happening at the state party versus what some of my reporting uncovered. And just as a recap, my most recent story found that dozens of agencies in state government failed to train supervisors in sexual harassment prevention and response, about 1,800 supervisors in the last couple years. So I think if there's a connection there, it's showing that at these big institutions, there is still a lot of progress to be made. I'm not sure if the training noncompliance, the failure to train at the Democratic Party, if that's an issue there. I can't speak to that, right. But I think it does show that these are ongoing issues that big institutions are wrestling with.
Scott, Speaker Nancy Pelosi gave an address and was interrupted by an offsite address. I believe.
Actually, no, it was on.
It was on site.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The convention hall
gave an address and was interrupted by someone who requested the president be impeached. And we know there's been a lot of discussion on impeachment, of course. Later this week, you'll dive into how the party is grappling with this idea, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I would say that the word request is probably a generous description of
okay.
it. And it wasn't just one. It was a number of people who were shouting the word impeach, essentially. And I'll get into this further as I rejoin Insight later in the week, but Nancy Pelosi used just about every word she could to say that she was going to hold President Trump accountable, except the word impeach. She very much spoke around that word, and a number of delegates and onlookers were happy to provide that word for her by shouting it out.
Uh-huh. Ben, to go back to the candidates that were there, the presidential candidates, you spoke with some delegates who are uncommitted. We'll hear from them later in the week, possibly tomorrow.
Yeah.
Did you get a sense if any candidate or candidates were getting more traction than others with these uncommitted delegates?
I think the leader among our group of four was Elizabeth Warren. And I don't necessarily know if she was the leader coming in. I think they had their eyes on her, or some of them had their eyes on her. But I think they were all impressed with how she did. And so I think she gets some momentum coming out of this weekend in California, because polls have shown, you know, Biden and then Sanders and Harris and Warren down past, I think, Sanders and Harris. And if Warren goes up, it will come at the expense most likely of Sanders and Harris. There were two Bernie Sanders voters from 2016 in our group, and they might vote for Bernie, but there's a decent chance they won't. I mean, they kind of have Warren and Sanders as their two. So you can see that and they praise Sanders for his ideas, but they kind of look at him as maybe, you know, his moment has passed, or he did a service getting it on getting these issues on the radar. But other candidates can better carry the torch moving forward. So to me, if this thinking continues to surge, then I think it goes to Warren's benefit. And I think it's a problem for Kamala Harris, who needs to do well in her home state to have a shot at the nomination.
And in my conversation with delegates as well, that was also a theme, that Warren was someone who they were very impressed with. There's actually one delegate who was even wearing a Harris lanyard. And he said, you know, I love Harris. I love what she's done for the state. But Warren was the one who really blew me away this weekend.
Harris, actually, I think her campaign paid to put a bunch of lanyards out there. And a lot of people who weren't necessarily supporting her still wore it. And someone's like, well, they were the best ones that were available, the thickest. So, you know,
this is true.
That's how people figure it out.
Yeah.
Based on swag.
On a side note, the swag at these conventions is always great. I think Eric Swalwell had shoelaces.
Okay.
Is that right?
I'm
not
sure. I didn't catch that.
Why? But there were shoelaces.
Alex Padilla, who's not even on the ballot right now, Secretary of State, who just got reelected to his second term as Secretary of State, paid for all the room keys to have his logo on all the room keys at one of the convention hotels.
The keys, not the rooms themselves.
No, yes, but the keys. Yeah, but the key.
Good to know, because, you know, I don't know if you want anyone taking a lead. What do you mean by
the rooms? Oh, I was going to say, he didn't pay for the rooms. He just paid for the actual keys. If I may say, my favorite swag was probably Scott Wiener's. He had a foam.
Of San Francisco.
San Francisco. He had a foam hot dog. And so people were handing out Scott Wiener foam hot dog wieners. So I was like,
why not?
Clever, yeah.
Finally, to wrap it up, would you guys say that Democrats in California feel like they're in a good place, or that they're still outliers nationally?
Hmm. I think they're pleased with what the state is doing. I think they're deeply concerned about Washington, and I think they're deeply divided over the path forward. I also think there is somewhat of a divide over the future of the state party. I have to say there was a lot of anxiousness among what you might say the establishment crowd over what a Kimberly Ellis leadership of the party would look like, a lot of rejoicing and relief Saturday night when she won. And when I tweeted that out, which was just factual reporting based on conversations I had had, the blowback on my Twitter feed was intense.
Wow.
So I think that's just an indication of, you know, that there is a divide. And it's similar to the Republicans. I mean, look, there are parallels that you can draw between the Republican state party chair race in February, Jessica Patterson, the establishment candidate, against Travis Allen, the Tea Party grassroots candidate who tried to do the same thing last year in the governor's race, fell short in the primary, tried to do the same thing this year in the state party chair race, fell short. Kimberly Ellis twice has tried to run for state party chair and has fallen short.
Scott? I agree with Ben. I think that people, the more quote-unquote establishment part of the party, I think they were seeing the writing on the wall of Ellis, who spoke about wanting to come in and make a lot of changes. She wasn't shy about that. If you listen to her speeches, specifically at the convention, and if you read her platform stances, she talks about this. She talks about not wanting it to be the same old Democratic Party as before. And just reading off of her site, she says the party cannot merely stand for obtuse and broad social value statements, kind of taking a dig and saying, you know, we can't just pay lip service to some of these things generally. We have to get in and make changes.
All right. Looking ahead, next big events are the debates. The first is at the end of the month, June 26th and 27th, because there will be two nights needed for all the candidates. That'll take place in Miami. Cap Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler and state government reporter Scott Rodd talking about this past weekend's California Democratic Party convention in San Francisco. Thanks to you both.
You're welcome.
Great to have you in the room. Our coverage of those of the state Democratic Party will continue all week, and we'll keep you up to date on what those topics will be. We're not exactly sure at this point, but this is Insight here on Cap Radio.